Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, everybody. I've had an absolute blast recording your championship intros on audio and also on video. And for those of you that didn't know, the videos can be done special exactly the way you like them, because these are green screens and we can do them with a scene behind me. Do you want a fighting scene? Do you want a beach scene? Do you want a race car scene? Any scene you want, we can give it to you. It's your theme and my pleasure. Just write our offices and we will answer you with the exact fee involved and how it'll get done. So here we are, and now it's time, and it's your choice. Cheers!
From the shores of Malibu, where the waves are pumping, to the Great Wall of China, and back to the streets of Miami, where the UFC is coming. We are live. This is It's Time Radio, the show where we talk about what you think about, but maybe you're afraid to voice. Do not worry. We'll voice it for you. No holds barred radio, folks. Sex, drugs, rock and roll, UFC, film, TV, politics, you name it, we talk about it. A lot to get off our chest today, and I'm going to do it very well with my co-host and my producer, TJ DeSantis. Hi, TJ. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you. We've got a special guest coming on. We'll bring on in just a few minutes. You know, it's been an exciting week. Got back from the San Antonio show. I want to save it because our guest is the Count, Michael Bisping. He'll be popping on here in a sec, and God knows he has a lot to say. Let's do a little power slap talk, a little UFC talk, and we'll share some stuff with him. TJ, I just got to start at the top of the show. This Nashville shooting is just horrific.
Yeah.
I got to tell you that Kristen was in tears, you know, when she came to work. I had not checked the news yet. I thought, what the heck happened? And then I saw it, and what mother, what father, what parent could not be upset by this, much less any normal human being? Did you see the video of the police officers going in?
I did, yeah.
You don't have respect and feel for police officers that when they're putting their lives on the line and in danger in a situation like that. And Brian, you know, my brother, who's ex-SWAT and retired police officer, this is an example of fine police work in a horrific, horrific situation.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to say this, but police officers in those situations, I mean, they're almost in more danger than soldiers in war. You know, honestly, like the idea of having to go after an active shooter with so many unknown elements involved, it's really terrifying.
Yeah, you know, it's just like going when they're going through the door, you know, you don't know where the shooter's going to be, where they're going to come at you. I mean, it's just
right.
It's dangerous. But, you know, they got there. I'm sorry to say that four children and two adults died. But they took this piece of shit out, and you know, thank God for that.
What's hard about it too, Bruce, is like the people that, you know, go that hard to this level where they, you know, act upon these impulses to harm random people. I mean, more often than not, they do end up, you know, perishing throughout that. And that's what's scary too. They have this mindset where they just don't care anymore and they want to take out as many people as possible. And it's just like, I don't know what drives you to that. You know, we could talk all day about that until we're blue in the face, but it's just like, mad respect to those that go out there and put their lives on the line, because it's a scary, scary world.
Yeah, and I apologize for starting off on a negative thing, but this is something we all have to be confronted with. But you know what? It's the other story of the coin is that they want to catch him alive so they know what made him do it.
You but know, but me, even, like, even the answer, though, is not going to really bring much peace. You know what I mean? Like, the parents of the children that, you know, were you know, tragically murdered, they're not going to hear a response from someone that goes like, oh, it's not going to give them any peace of mind.
No, it's not. But, you know, one thing, take them out so they don't have to read about this garbage person for the next 3 years as we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars trying them and giving them 3 hot meals a day in jail.
Right. I mean, you and I agree on that. There's just no point in trying to prolong any sort of rehabilitation process. Like, you're broken. You're fundamentally broken. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. With all this being said, there's a number of celebrities donating, you know, to the parents. The headmaster of the school tried to stop the killer. She paid the worst price possible by being killed. As a result, she's being hailed as a hero. I'm sorry, it's after she passed away. But my condolences and wishes go out to all the families and loved ones of these individuals that died, but also to all the others that are even there, because the traumatic experience that children and parents and adults go through in the situation is long life lasting.
Yeah.
It's horrific in so many different ways.
You know, what's crazy? Columbine happened when I was a freshman in high school, and it was sort of treated as a very isolated incident. You know, obviously we've had so many more active shooting, you know, things since then, but like, I can't imagine what it's like for these kids to go to school and have to deal with the idea that, you know, there are drills in place for things like this. Like my son, when he was in kindergarten, they had a active shooter drill. And like, I was just trying to put my, you know, mindset in his shoes. And it's just like, how when you're 5 years old, do you even try to wrap your head around what that drill is and what you're supposed to be doing?
All I used to remember was fire and earthquake drills.
Right.
That was my thing to worry about as a kid.
Right. For us in the Midwest, it was fire and tornado drills.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, totally. All right. Well, again, we need to be aware. We need to live in freedom. We need to live our lives. But this crap is happening daily, and it's just getting beyond.
Yeah.
Beyond.
Well, let's change things. I got Michael Bisping here. You want me to add him?
Yeah. Let's bring on the count.
All right. Let's do it.
Michael, we just touched on the fact of the horrific shooting in Nashville. We've talked all we can about it, but as a parent, I'm sure it's just devastating to see what happened.
It's just awful. It is just awful. Listen, you know, I'm not going to get involved on all the guns and things like that because it upsets a lot of people, but
right.
To see, all I care about is innocent children and innocent people losing their lives. You know what I mean? And sometimes I get on my high horse a little bit and I talk about guns and things like that. And it upsets a lot of people. And I understand people's rights and I understand the American way of life. And I live here and I've adopted life here. But I can't help but feel so sad, sick to my stomach, and just my heart aches with misery and sadness because it's just bloody awful. And I just hate to see that. If that makes me a bloody left-wing piece of garbage, then so be it, because I don't want to see innocent people losing their lives. That's it.
Absolutely. And you come from a country that does not allow the possession of guns, if I'm not mistaken, right? In England?
Yeah. No, that's absolutely right. Now, listen, I understand there's different lives and different cultures, and I'm respectful of that, you know? And people say, oh, well, you know, there's plenty of people in the UK that are victims of knife crime. And you're absolutely right. Of course, I never sit there and say that England or whatever country is better than America. That's not what I'm saying.
No,
I'm just always saying that, you know, this is a tragedy. And between all the intelligent people that live here in this country and the people that are running it, maybe there's a better way of doing things. Maybe mental health screening, maybe a little bit, you know, I don't see a world where somebody needs to own an AK-47. But still, I'm upsetting a lot of people right now.
See,
you know what?
That's just crazy, Bruce. Go ahead, Bruce. Sorry.
All of a sudden, I'm with you, Michael. It's no secret to the show that I'm a huge gun collector, historical weapon collector.
Yeah.
I have a very large collection in vaults and everything else. Otherwise, I have my protection weapons, and I have an assault weapon. But I'm the first one to say that they should be banned and not for citizens to have. They're military weapons. I would hand mine in a heartbeat. All you need is a good Glock, a 12-gauge shotgun, and your house is protected.
Well, we've talked a lot about this, Bruce, over the years, and this is what I don't understand, and I think, Michael, you're hitting on it, is the idea that common sense is really what needs to come, you know, to the forefront here. I don't know why anybody needs to have a high-powered weapon that is solely designed for killing massive amount of things in a short period of time. It just doesn't make sense to me.
And if they tell me it's for hunting, then we have a whole nother problem conversation.
Well,
it's
literally illegal to go hunting with the AK-47. You can't own one of those.
Oh, is it really?
Guns. Yeah.
Is it? I did not know that.
Yeah, you can have a rifle, and there are certain amounts of limits to like what ammunition you can use. Like, so where I'm from in Minnesota, when you go duck hunting, You have to put a plug in your shotgun so you can't have more than three shells in it. So you can only shoot three times before having to reload. Like there are all sorts of rules that make it so you can't just go out there and go crazy.
Well, that makes sense. But also, too, an AK-47 round, it hits you. It takes your arm off. People don't realize how devastating an AK-47 round is, much less a military 308 round, which you get hit one time. It's not
right.
John Wick in the movies, which we're going to talk about, too. I saw it last night. It's your arm gets blown off. Okay, but let's just be real. And the bottom line is, without getting very graphic, there's no reason for us to have assault weapons. If they made the rule, I'll hand mine in tomorrow morning.
Well, those are tools of war. They're warfare, you know? Like, exactly.
Hey, Michael, you're from England. You couldn't have a gun in England. Do you have a gun as a family member at home?
I do not. Although I will sound like a hypocrite here.
You got two guns, Michael.
Yeah, well, there you go. You know, an old boxing coach of mine, Mark Kinney, when I was training in England, I remember we were going through the airport. We were going through security and the TSA agent said, "Have you got any weapons on you?" And he said, "Left Duke. Right hand." I'll never forget that. Shout out, Mark Kinney.
Is that why I had to wait for you?
Pardon me?
Is that why I had to wait for you?
Yeah. No, I don't. But we are going to be getting one soon because at the end of the day, I'm away a lot. I travel a lot. And my wife and children are vulnerable. And everyone out here, if anyone's coming to the house, they're not coming unarmed. You know what I mean? They're coming with a weapon more than likely. So very soon. So if you want to come by our house and cause some trouble, you've got about a week or two to do so, because then after that, your head's going to get blown off, because unfortunately in this country, that's the way it's got to be. So be it.
So wait, it's just one last thing. Anybody that buys a weapon, I'm going to add this and then we'll go on to another conversation. You need to go formally trained.
Yep.
Go take all the training, safety training, everything else. Very important. With that
said. Yeah, my wife's enrolled in a course very shortly. There's a school out here that go through that, all that kind of thing. My agent, Auditar from Paradigm, he set it up for us. So as I say, you know, my wife is feeling very, very vulnerable. I'm on the road all the time. She's sitting there by herself, you know. So, yeah, that's what we're doing. So
see, that's what's scary, though. There are a lot of people that don't get that formal training and they just go get a gun. And I'm not going to name him by name, but, you know, a guy I used to work for, he got a gun and he rolled into the gun shop to buy some ammunition and he didn't even know what gun he had. He's just like, "I need some bullets." It's like,
that's the crazy thing. And that's what I'm talking about. You know, a little bit more screening, a little bit more tuition, you know,
right.
To drive a car, you have to learn how to drive a car.
Yeah.
One would assume to have a weapon that is capable of killing many, many people, you would have to learn how to use said weapon. But still, nobody wants to hear an Englishman sitting here and going on about gun laws, because I don't know a gun from a Yorkshire pudding. So I'll leave that one there. No offense.
And I don't know a Yorkshire pudding from a gun. So
Yorkshire pudding is one of the best things you'll ever taste in your life.
I know. I've had it. I'm kidding. I've had
it. No, what is it? I don't know what that is. Tell me.
So when you have a traditional roast beef dinner, if my wife was there, she'd tell you. So it's goose fat and flour and eggs kind of mixed up. You get the goose fat really, really hot. Then you put it in like a baking tray and it rises up. You have it with beef and gravy and potatoes, vegetables. Traditional English roast dinner, Yorkshire pudding. Oof, it's beautiful.
Do you remember TJ restaurants chain called Gulliver's?
No, I don't think we have
those.
There
was a place called Gulliver's, a big chain here in California. It used to be down where Michael lives and, you know, where you live. They had them all over the place. And the girls would come out with the shirts, you know, down to their shoulders. And they would say, "I'm your wench." Not "I'm your waitress." "I'm your wench."
All right.
"And I'm doing this." And they serve one meal. It was prime rib, green spinach, one other item I forget. And Yorkshire pudding for Yorkshire pudding.
It sounds amazing.
It was just one set meal, but it was jammed. They were packed.
Yeah, I want to go.
Every time. So, Michael, we come off San Antonio, another exciting show. We had the Corey Sandhagen, the Marlon Vera fight. I had no problem with the scoring on that. Did you? All that?
Listen, I'm a friend of Marlon Vera. That's why a lot of people say my commentary was very biased. I had a little bit of problem with the scoring that one guy gave it to Cheeto. You know, as much as I love and respect Cheeto, he didn't win that fight. You know, that's my only issue, that it was a split decision. It should have been a unanimous decision. I'm not trying to add insult to injury to Cheeto. He's a friend of mine.
Right.
We spoke after the fight. He clearly lost the fight. He never showed up. He had a bad night at the office. It happens sometimes.
Yep.
It was a mental block. combined with the fact that Corey Sandhagen was absolutely phenomenal, you know, but also he didn't show up either. And sometimes you have a mental block. Sometimes the anxiety, the nerves, the pressure, the consequences of the night can all get to you. So I think it was partly Chito was having one of those nights. I think it was the overload of data from Corey Sandhagen, the way he was moving, the switching stances was kind of confusing him and he couldn't get a rhythm going. And then on top of that, he had a bad night as well. You put it all together. Yeah, it was a great night for Sandhagen and a terrible night for Chito.
That's the way to put it together. The co-main event with Yana Kuniskaya and Holly Holm. Holly Holm was completely, devastatingly dominating at 41 years old. It's one of the best performances I've ever seen her give. I can't say that much more. You know, I mean, do you feel Holly Holm could be a champion again?
I mean, judging by that performance Saturday night, I don't see why not. She looks better than ever. And she certainly was probably more aggressive than ever. You know, yes. I thought she was very close to finishing the fight on multiple occasions, certainly in round two and three. Looked like she was close to getting the first ever submission. High yes. pace, you know. She's always had tremendous cardio and she's always had great movement and strategy. But she was super aggressive on Saturday night as well. And as I say, when you look at that performance, I mean, who's the champion? I mean, it's Amanda Nunes.
Right.
Listen, not an easy fight. She's lost to her before. Might lose again, but I don't know. Nunes, with the greatest of respect, because I'm a huge fan, maybe slipping a little bit as well, because that's what happens. But who knows? Who knows? You never know what a story that would be.
The thing I love about Holly, guys, right now is, you know, you mentioned her age. And as you get older, a little bit longer in the tooth in the octagon, you have to have good fight IQ. She's, you know, displayed that throughout her career. But the way that she performed, I mean, she seems to be more comfortable with who she is and her style and in implementing it than she ever has before.
I mean, she's always had great attributes. She's tall, she's long, rangy, great footwork, excellent boxing. Now combining in a lot more takedowns, you know, looking for crucifixes on the ground, close to getting the submission, as I say. You know, she looks better than ever, you know, which at 41 years old is quite the statement, you know. And but hey, she was great. She was really good.
Exactly. And her incessant front kicks and side kicks and just, you know, nonstop using it like jabs, just boom, 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 the way you should use a front kick like that, you know. It was beautiful. It was beautiful to watch. I love watching Holly, not just when she's fighting, but when she walks in the octagon and she's jumping up and down like a little pixie, you know. Running right. It's the cutest. She's cute right before. And then she goes to war like a shark eyed devil, you know.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, I like the way she's pacing up and down in between every round right before the fight. And she does, she's jumping up and down. She's just full of energy. And ever since she came to the UFC, she's been in a solid addition to the roster. And at 41, again, it's almost insulting to keep going on about her age. You're not supposed to speak about a lady's age like that. But hey, it's a talking point. 41, a lot of men are slowing down at that age. At 41, she's out there. She's showing these ladies that, hey, it can still be done at this age. Age is just, a number. There you go. Thank you, Bruce.
I will say this about women. You know, I've called a lot of fights for Invicta over the years, and we had some athletes that were kind of pulling that Randy Couture where they would come in their mid to late 30s and would be making their debut. I do feel like women have a little bit longer or at least extended career compared to some of their male counterparts.
Well, I mean, it depends if they're having children or not, I guess.
True.
If I'm not mistaken, I don't believe Holly's had any children. So, you know, there is that. It's certainly a factor, you know, for women generally, professionally, whether you're a fighter or not, you know, but it's just the way it is. Women, men, women, families, you know, they're not a family, you know, they like to have children. And that is going to severely affect, you know, the training. It's going to take you out for at least a year. I mean, that's what's so impressive about Yana Santos, pardon me, you know, since her last fight, I think it was 20 months or something. Mm. She was pregnant for 9 months. Then she's had a 10-month-old baby. And then she was in there against Holly Holm. I mean, shout out to her as well. I mean, that is a ridiculous schedule. That's a lot to go through. And on top of that, her husband, Thiago Santos, is fighting, I think, next weekend or something in the PFL. So both partners are training for a fight. And obviously, that's a very hard thing to do. But normally, you've got your spouse, you know, the person on the other side assisting you, maybe doing the cooking, helping you out, whatever. They're both going through a training camp at the same time with a 10-month-old baby. No, thank you. That's a high-stress situation.
We're, we're, talk,
You would know better than anybody. I want to apologize. I called her by her maiden name. Yes. Yes. Yana Santos. Correct.
You were talking about age, and I know it's not, you know, a hard, steadfast rule for every athlete, but do you feel, Michael, there is a prime age, or what did you experience for your own self as you got older? Like, what were your best years number-wise, you think?
Certainly towards the end of my career, which is obviously as you're getting older, you know, you're slowing down, but I never felt like I was slowing down. My emotions were certainly getting better because I was maturing, not only as a person, but maturing as a fighter. And the mental side of things is everything in the fight game. Yes, of course, it's a highly physical sport, but the better thinker you are, the better fighter you're going to be, the more strategy you're going to have, the better you are going to control your emotions. You know, when you're in there, you've got one of the best fighters on the planet standing opposite you. They're trying to take your head off. You know, that is a highly fueled, highly adrenaline fueled situation, but you've got to be able to control that. You're going to be right. Very cool, calm, and collected. That's why Anderson Silva was always so great. Yes. Look at Anderson. He was always just, it's like he was taking a stroll in the park. He was never hyped up. He was never screaming like that. Fedor Emelianenko, he was always well known for being so stoic. Mirko Krokop, there's a lot of people like that. When you can control those emotions, you'll fight better generally. When you're reacting out of emotion, you're going to fight worse because that's the last thing you want to do. So, yeah, but as you get older, you get better at doing that. When I was younger in my career, I remember I used to go sit in the corner of the locker room and close my eyes and try and wind myself up and think, come on, let's get fired up because I'm going to go fight, you know, because I think if I get angry and mad, I'm a force to reckon with. And yeah, that's okay. That might work against 95% of people. But when you get to the true elite, it's gonna bite you in the backside.
Hey guys, you mentioned Anderson Silva, Michael. I just saw this today. His son Gabriel is set to make his professional boxing debut next month. That's gonna be interesting to see the second generation of Silva here. I mean, boxing, but I mean that's a lot of pressure on that young man.
Yeah, boxing. Definitely. But beautiful to see, though. You know, yeah. Because obviously Anderson passing down the skills and all the rest of it, and he'll be mentoring him. And listen, if his father can do it, he's got the same DNA, he's going to have the same genes, and I fully expect him to go out there and have a great career. And yeah, all the best to him and Anderson Silva. I'm such a fan of that guy. I know when I fought him, you know, I did my usual thing. I talked trash. I was trying to sell the fight and try and get in his head a little bit and make him doubt it. You know, himself. And of course, you know, I do have a strong stance against fighters using steroids. You know, do what you want afterwards. I couldn't care less. But when you're stepping foot in the octagon, you know, I have an issue with that. But when that's all said and done, Anderson Silva is one of the biggest legends and most respectable people in this sport. And he will forever have my respect.
Well, it's a good thing for his manager, Ed Suarez, because Anderson Silva retires and his son steps in, you know.
There you go. You keep the train rolling.
Yeah, they keep the train rolling. So thank you, San Antonio. Your energy, everything. The fans were just electric, the whole nine yards. You know, wonderful to be in Texas for these shows. We lost a couple fights, but we still had a good solid one. We have 10 fights, I think we wound up with.
I think it was 11.
Or no, we lost one during the show, remember?
Oh, no, that's right. Yeah. You're right. 10.
That's 10. My favorite amount. Like, I like a good anywhere from 8 to 10 fight card. Like, that's the perfect night. Yeah.
But the annoying thing for me is, you know, because obviously when you're researching these fighters, I like them to drop out earlier in the week. Right. On the Saturday, yeah. I've already done the research.
Doing all the work.
Yes. Sometimes they rebook the fight, but it's not always relevant. Some things have changed. You've got more things to know. I'm like, if you're going to drop out, can you do me a favor and do it on a Wednesday? You know, because on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I am cramming. It's like we were just in London. And, you know, I'm very grateful for all the support I have over there. And I've got a lot of friends and family. And they all think, oh, great, Mike, you're in England. Come and see me. Let's go out for dinner. Let's go grab a beer. Let's do this. Let's do that. And I'm like, guys, I have so much work to do. This is not a vacation. I land on the Wednesday. I leave early Sunday morning. And I've got a lot of work to do. I've got to do fighter meetings. Got to do the weighing show, BT Sport obligations and stuff like that. There's my dad, there's aunties and uncles, there's friends, there's people. I'm like, guys, I will be sitting in my hotel room on my own, looking at articles, their Instagram profiles, just researching these fighters, you know? So don't be offended if I ignored your calls.
You know, it's another thing that sort of bums me out when I call fights is you'll do all that research, Mike, and then maybe the fight happens and it's over in like 30 seconds. It's like, dang, I didn't even get to, you know, fire off all this prep work. You know,
that's the equivalent of me announcing a fight, getting back to my seat, just sitting down or almost sitting down. I look up and there was a knockout.
Right.
Yeah. Jorge Masvidal versus Ben Askren. You just sit down. He's like, whoa, I'm back in there again.
Back in there again, which my job as far as the preparation, I have a lot of preparation, but nowhere near what you guys go through. Much less in London when you had 15 fights versus 11 fights, eventually 10 here. And it's like, I'll ask John Anik and even you, Mike, to go out to dinner on a Friday night. Forget it. You guys can't. You're busy working.
Yeah. And I'm not just like, if I go out, I talk a lot. I talk very loud and my voice is very fragile. So like, yeah, these days, the night before a fight, I'm locked up in my room. I'm being very antisocial because I have to be, you know, because Zach, head of production, if I show up the next day and my voice is like that, he's like, you son of a bitch.
Right.
You were out last night, weren't you? We know it. So yeah, those days for me are long, long, long gone. I love my job. I'm so grateful for my position and you got to give it the respect that it's due.
Well, let's talk about your job. Your job is, as we just discussed, you know, you do a great job. There's no question.
Thank you.
You know, I read these things about people talking about bias and all this kind of stuff. And I'm sorry. I get a giggle, you know, because I know what goes into your job. I just get a giggle. They don't know what you have to do. Nobody knows what we have to do unless you're doing what we have to do, as we don't know what they have to do unless we do what they do. You know,
but there is a bias for an analyst, I think, for Michael Bisping. And that bias is just calling it the way you see it. You know
what
I mean?
He's a fighter. Like,
right. Yeah. If people say, oh, you're cheering for X, Y, and Z, it's not that you're cheering. It's just how you see the fight unfolding.
Yeah. So Saturday night, a lot of people, you know, on my Twitter were like, you were so biased for Cheeto. Listen, it was clearly evident to anybody that's watched a fight before that what Corey Sandhagen doing was phenomenal. Okay. That was clearly evident. He was winning the fight. He was so technically beautiful, and any young fighter should watch him and aspire to be like that. But one of the big storylines was that Cheeto wasn't fighting. So I was talking about that a lot because it was blowing my mind. Yes, I know Cheeto, but so what? I can separate the fact that for this 15, 25-minute period, we're not friends. It's two professionals, and I'm calling their fights. Yeah, I was talking about Cheeto because he wasn't showing up. And it's like, right. Is this the round that he's going to start fighting? What is he doing? Why is he waiting so long? That was a big... excuse me, a storyline in the fight with Kamaru Usman and Leon Edwards, you know, close fight. But Leon was winning. You know, Justin Gaethje came out and said, oh, Bisping was biased. Was I biased when I called your fight against Rafael Fiziev? Fiziev is from Europe. Perhaps I was biased towards him. No, I was talking about how sensational he was, how he switched up his approach in rounds 2 and 3, in the third round using the jab and the uppercuts. That was fantastic. Yeah. I'm sure he's changed his stance when he went back and watched his own fight and saw how glowing I was in his fight. But surely I'm being biased there.
Hey Mike. When you were fighting, were you paying attention to that? Did you go back and listen to the commentary? And were you ever, you know, wanted to take offense to anything that anyone was saying?
I don't think I did. Not really. Sometimes like that was obviously in the later days, you know, we had Fox Sports with the pre-shows on and things, right. And I'd be in the room and, you know, one of the other fighters that was on the panel doing the job that I typically do when I'm not fighting, we have to make picks, you know, and I can't remember who it was picking against me. There was one fight in particular. I forget who it was. And genuinely I do. And they picked against me. And I took that personally, which I shouldn't have done. We have to make a judgment call. We have to say who we think is going to win. And that's fair enough. That is a difficult thing to do because you're going to offend one of the parties. There's only two fighters there.
Right.
You're going to pick one. You're going to offend the other, and the other one's going to be your best friend. But that's why that's the job.
And it's different too. It's not like a game. It's a fight. Like if you pick against someone's like basketball team or football team, you know, those athletes aren't going to take too much offense to it. But when you are predicting someone to get knocked out, you know, it's a one-on-one sport.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. How do you think they lose? Well, they're going to get knocked out in the first round. And you're like, what? Right. Oh, I'm going to show you. And right. I'll be having a word with you when I catch up. But that was a long time ago. That was a 2015 fighter, Michael Bisping. Not the 2023 posse that a lot of people call me. Well, that ended that.
Oh man, I think Buffer's frozen over there.
He's just mesmerized.
Yeah.
He's mesmerized right now by the pure entertainment factor between the two of us.
Well, while we try to get him back, Mike, I'm curious. Do you play video games or anything like that, Michael?
Not really. I used to when I was younger, actually. But these days, I just don't have time. I don't have time. And I'm not very good. I mean, Street Fighter 2, I will say this. I'll beat anybody on Street Fighter 2. I'm pretty good at that. But Call of Duty, it is a fantastic game. But I just get my head blown off 5 seconds into it. I'm like, what's the point of this?
And then you got 10-year-olds talking shit, too.
Yeah, I've got 10-year-olds talking shit. I get my head blown off every 5 seconds. I'm like, this is no fun to me. You know, so I like to do the campaign mode now and again. And my kids are like, Dad, nobody does the campaign mode. What do you
do?
I'm like, well, I do.
It's you and me, Bisping, doing the campaign mode because I can't handle the smack talk from 10-year-olds.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we got you, Bruce. Bro. I think you're coming through your microphone, so your computer microphone, though, and not your big microphone.
Oh, I'm coming through the phone. No.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe not. It's okay. It's okay.
That's all right. Here we are. Can you hear me okay, though?
Yeah, it's all right.
We got you, buddy.
We just had an electrical thing here, and it just killed my internet. So sorry. This rain has caused so many problems around this area.
Yeah,
so
we were just talking about that. The rain here has just been ridiculous, on and off for 6 months now.
No, it's nuts. So, Michael, I don't mean to interrupt you, whatever you were talking before, but I want to get into the other stuff that you're doing now, which is Power Slap.
Oh, yeah, Power Slap. Hey, listen, it's getting a lot of negative press. A lot of people are talking shit, you know, but when you're there, I'll tell you this. It is very, very exciting. Listen, you know, the visceral thing about mixed martial arts or fighting or boxing or combat sports in general, the most jaw-dropping moments is when you see somebody get knocked out. And people get knocked out. And I understand, oh, there's no defense and all the rest of it. I understand that. But when you sit and you talk to these people and you understand their backgrounds, then I'm all for it. Because Dana White never invented Power Slap. You know, these events happen all over the world. They're all over Russia, the US, all over the place. There's no medical screening for the people taking part in it. And, you know, yeah, it could be dangerous. Now, with Power Slap, yes, of course, there's medical screening. And, of course, the money's better than it will be on any of the other promotions. And when I sat down, because I wasn't sure about it, you know, but when I sat down and spoke to the people competing, and I remember when I first started, like I was telling Dana, you know, it really changed my opinion on it when I spoke to these people. I remember when I was on The Ultimate Fighter, and back then I was flat broke, no money, not a pot to piss in. It was so stressful just trying to live, the bills coming in, trying to raise a family. You know, I left school at 16. There wasn't many options. And I started this road to become a fighter. And I went on The Ultimate Fighter and I won a couple of fights and I got into the final. And I remember adding it up and thinking, wow, I get $5,000 for each stoppage. I got two of them. I get X amount of dollars per week for being on it. And when I finished, I was on the phone to my wife going, I'm coming home with about $17,000, babe. This is life-changing for us. And it's easy to forget those times because I'm very lucky because I've had a great career and I became world champion and it's opened up a lot of other doors and avenues. You know, but these people, when you speak to them, they're very working class, they're blue collar, they're working 2, 3, 4 jobs just to support a family. I spoke to one guy, his kid has a condition. I forget the name of it. He said there's less than 1,000 kids in the world that have this. Sadly, going to die soon. But by doing Power Slap, this allows me to not work and spend some more time with my children. And when you speak to these people, and yeah, there's some of them that are kind of crazy and reckless and all the rest of it, you know, there always is in mixed martial arts, but there's some people that are nice, normal, level-headed people. And, you know, they're trying to earn some money because they've got a bigger reason in life. And listen, you can scoff at it. You can laugh at it. You can berate it. But when you hear the personal stories involved, it's hard not to understand and feel for them.
Yeah. And you listen, everybody's got to make money. It's growing very popular though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it did very well. And I think the second one's underway soon. I don't have any details yet, but I think there will be another one happening soon. Yeah.
I mean, just listen, look at the YouTube
success
hits
and different strokes for different. I'm sorry, TJ. Success. I'm back on regular. Success and different strokes for different folks. You know, give them a chance to make their money. It's been approved by the commission. It's got one of the greatest promoters in the history of sports behind it, named Dana White.
Yep.
And WME and everything else involved. And it's got one of the best commentators, greatest commentators ever to walk in, ex-champion, ex-fighter, and Michael Bisping. So you know what? If you don't like it, don't watch it. But a lot of people like it. A lot of people watching it.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, and listen, and those people that criticize it, yeah, I get where you're coming from. But there's two sides to the coin. You know what I mean? There really is. And there's people... There's people that have tried. Not everyone's good enough to go out there and become a professional mixed martial artist and make a career out of it. But right. There's some people, you know, that don't mind this kind of thing, and they enjoy the adrenaline, and they enjoy the moment, and they enjoy competing. And you call it whatever you want. There's, you know, but it's an opportunity for them to take their very unique set of skills and turn it into something positive and make some money. And yeah, okay, is it dangerous? Yeah, all right. Of course it is. So's mixed martial arts. I've got one eye. I've got no knees. I've got a broken back, half a brain cell. Do you know what I mean? But I left school at 16 years old with no future whatsoever. I was getting a lot of trouble with the law. I went to prison, and now I'm sitting here and I'm living in a nice house in Orange County, and life is great, right? And there's a potential for some of these people to do a similar thing with this. So you can't hate on it. Horses for courses. And as you said, Bruce, it's perfect. If you don't like it, don't watch.
Yeah, don't watch.
There's a lot of people that do watch it and do like it.
Well, I think we live in a time where like hardcore MMA fans feel like they have to consume everything, even if it's not MMA. If the UFC or Dana White is doing something, they feel like they have to watch it. But like at this point, you're right. And Dana has said it too. You know, if you think a UFC card isn't up to snuff, don't watch it. You know, there's offerings week in and week out, and you know, just
let me tell you this, there's still mixed martial arts has come so far, right? Yeah. And I'm not saying that, listen, mixed martial arts is a beautiful sport, and power slap is, you know, it's very basic, okay? But look at how the reception was for mixed martial arts when it first came around. You know, human cockfighting, it was banned, right. It wasn't even allowed on cable TV. And the reality is, you know, there's still a lot of people that feel like that. You know, I was on this movie last year, as I said before, and one of the guys, and he's become a lifelong friend of mine, huge boxing fan. And the first night we went out to dinner and we got to know each other, shout out Luca Pasqualino, he was saying, you know, well, once we, you know, we had a couple of drinks and we got to know each other a little better and we got talking. He was like, Mike, I'm a massive boxing fan, but I can't stand mixed martial arts. He said, I just don't get it. I don't like it. Somebody gets knocked down and they follow them down to the ground. I just don't see the beauty in that, Mike. And we had a long, healthy, respectable discussion. I'm like, mate, what are you talking about? Boxing is so dangerous. There's still 8 to 15 deaths per year, and there's a higher chance of brain damage and all the rest of it. So there's going to be critics to everything. There's still critics to mixed martial arts. And yeah, the mixed martial arts critics are now criticizing power slap. Well, there's a lot of people that criticize mixed martial arts. So who's right and who's wrong? Who cares? Don't like it. Don't watch. Stick it up your ass. Cheers.
That's the way to say it right there. Totally. Michael, okay, power slap, onward, upward. UFC, rocket ship upward. All that goes with it. John Wick 4.
Yeah.
I just took my boys to see it last night. And 2 hours and 40 minutes of nonstop romping over the top, way over the top versus John Wick 1, 2, and 3. Amazing how they do these scenes. You know that the average scene, that a fight scene in John Wick that could take 3 minutes on film probably takes 3 weeks to film, right? Yep. You know that all goes into that. I can't say enough how enjoyable, if you just want to see mayhem and see the bad guys get their due. Two things. I think they should call John Wick a superhero because he gets stabbed and shot, falling two stories, hitting his body on pillars coming out of the building, landing, getting up, beating up every bad guy, headshotting everybody he shoots at while 10 guys are shooting at him. Just like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, slowly rumbling through the jungle, and he's got 20 Sandinistas behind him spraying him with AK-47s, but nobody.
Let me ask you this real quick. I'm sorry to interrupt. A 100-pound woman probably hits him and knocks him flying across the room because women are so badass and they can do anything.
Right. Exactly. But thoroughly enjoyable. A lot of dramatic license. It is what it is. But if you want to see the bad guys get their just due, the second thing I want to say is Scott Atkins.
Yeah.
And that you work with. He's in the movie. He plays one of the lead heavies. Looked like he put on a little weight for this because he's normally so trim.
Yeah, no, he is. And I haven't spoken to him about it because we are good friends. I think it was just like a fat suit.
Was that what it was?
Yeah. I think he was wearing a fat suit because I saw some clips on his Instagram. And yeah, he looks big in it. But yeah, I think he's wearing a fat suit because at the premiere, he looked tip top again. So I think it's just prosthetics. They did a very, very good job in that.
He wasn't the ultra fat guy in the movie with the gold teeth, was he?
Yeah, the ultra fat guy with like a weird like Russian accent or something.
Oh, excuse me. There were two guys. So he was like really heavy in the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, that was him. Okay, the makeup they did for him, the teeth, yeah. Because when that 300, he was like a 300-pound heavy, he was the bad guy that came after him. They had a big fight scene. I misinterpreted from another guy I saw that was more facially like him. Okay, that makes it clear.
So I haven't seen the film yet. But on his Instagram, I've seen some clips of him in the suit dancing and just, you know, he's having a laugh.
And his whole face is made heavy too, right?
Correct. Yeah, his chin and everything. Yeah.
Oh, listen, even more so now that actually I'm going to praise him even more because that was a hell of an acting job on his part. And then when they had the fight scene and he started to move, I'm like, this big guy can move.
Yeah,
but that makes sense right there with Scott Atkins. Oh, okay, yeah. Cool. Very cool.
And by the way, one of the nicest guys you can ever meet. He really is just such a down-to-earth, so humble, and just a nice average guy that loves martial arts and he's really turned it into something successful. So shout out to Scott Atkins. But I'm going to say this, and I'm ashamed. I haven't seen any of the John Wick films.
You mentioned that to me. We were in the airport. You mentioned that to me in the airport. You hadn't seen any of them. You got to watch 1 through 3 before.
I know. It's my wife. She won't watch movies like that. You know, I got to watch them by myself. So maybe on a plane, I'll start at 1.
Get it on the plane or download it to your thing. They're thoroughly enjoyable. Keanu Reeves at 58 years old does a great job.
That's crazy to think he's that old.
It's crazy. Yeah. No, he's so talented.
I know.
Everyone says it's fantastic. I have got to watch it. Yeah. Yeah.
That's really wild. Well, listen, guys, I want to go on a few other things because we're going to close the show. TJ's got a hard out here. Elon Musk is auctioning off his first business card, right? And they're expecting his first business card to go for up to $20,000.
Well, whoever's got $20,000 to spend on an old, out-of-date business card where the cell phone number doesn't work and the email address isn't relevant anymore. I mean, I guess maybe one day it'll be worth loads because it'll be some kind of piece of history. But if you've got $20,000 and I've got a piece of oceanfront property I can sell you in Nevada, because send it my way because you got too much dough, because who gives a crap about that?
Exactly. Well, some people do, but honestly, I'm a big collector of memorabilia and it's not my touch. Good luck to Elon. Send the money to charity. Robert Downey Jr. has a piece of gum from the Walk of Fame, right? Piece of gum he put down in the Walk of Fame when he was there. Well, it's auctioning off. How much, guys? How much?
$100,000.
I'll say $50,000.
$55,000.
Wow. Wild. Okay. Wild.
Wild. Wild. And one last thing. I love these kind of stories. A dusty painting was hidden behind a door, rather a wall. They were cleaning out this wall. It turned out to be what they call a Bruegel, a 17th century painting by Pieter Bruegel.
Wow. And
that painting will fetch about $900,000.
That's amazing that it didn't deteriorate.
I know. It's unbelievable. Like
yeah.
See, that's cool. That's really cool. I like stuff like that because
I love those kind of stories.
We're a big collector of antiques, mainly my wife, you know.
So you appreciate that kind of stuff.
Oh, of course. Our house is full of antiques, not in this room, but everywhere. It's just full of antiques. And that's what we do in our spare time. You know, we don't really know what we're buying. We're probably being lied to a lot. You know, our first question is it old? And they could just say, oh, it's from the 17th century. I'm like, oh, let's buy it. But my wife loves weird, wonderful, old artifacts, original pieces. And yeah, she wants... She wants to go metal collecting. Her dream is to go metal collect, you know, like detecting, metal detecting.
We talk about these stories all the time.
Metal detecting and find like an old Roman coin or something like that. You know, I'm like, babe, I'll buy you a metal detector for Christmas.
We just talked about a story like that a few months ago and it was in England.
Right, yeah.
Detectors, they found the coins. Another one found this huge piece of like 17th, 16th century jewelry worth hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, that's right. No, I think we saw it and that's what spurred that conversation. He's like, I want to do that. I'm like, right, babe, don't worry.
What's crazy about, Europe and the metal detectors over there, you're like liable to find some, you know, unexploded ordnance from all the wars over there.
It happens.
Years. Yeah,
it happens.
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah. Be careful what you wish for.
Well, speaking of unexploded ordnance, Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, with the Raiders, Las Vegas Raiders, he was just offered free sex for life from the Las Vegas brothel workers.
There you go. There's an offer you can't refuse. I mean, his wife, if he's married, might not appreciate that. But hey, listen, come on. The perks of the job.
You know what? It's called promotion for the brothel. That's all.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
How to get your name on TMZ. So, Michael, you know, I know and I appreciate your enjoyment and liking of my It's Time cologne and,
oh yeah,
you know, the picture and everything. We just got last week, we're the fastest selling cologne on Amazon.
Wow, that is very impressive. Congrats, Bruce.
Yeah, well, Amazon and Walmart, it's all good. I want to show you one more thing as I show. This is all about you. This is my new
Puncher's Chance.
Well, yes, Puncher's Chance, but this is the new Puncher's Chance, which is the single barrel 105 proof version. How do you like this label? The Undisputed.
Oh, that's nice.
The Undisputed. There you go. I like that. Great packaging. Like love it.
Yeah, love this it. Is in.
So what's the difference? With it being Undisputed, what's the difference?
Well, this is a single barrel version, right? It's a certain way to make the bourbon. Okay. And my original is 90 proof. This is 105 proof.
Oh.
And
oh.
It has a totally different, lovely aftertaste.
Okay.
Really, really good. This will, unlike my reserve versions where I only have a couple thousand cases, they're all sold out. This will be readily available just like the original Puncher's Chance, and it's already getting into stores all over. You can just go to puncherschancebourbon.com, anybody out there, if they want to have one delivered to the house. Otherwise, check your BevMo stores. I'll be in Miami next week on Friday doing appearances in Miami, but that's enough shilling for me. Michael, is there anything that you want to bring up?
Yeah, not really. Not really. I mean, as you can see on the wall, it says, believe you me. Check out the podcast, believe you me. Other than that, I will see you where I see you. Bruce, TJ, always a pleasure talking to you guys. And
thanks, Michael.
Thanks for having me. And I'll see you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody tune into Michael Bisping's podcast too, not just this one. You got a very popular podcast. You do a great job, Michael.
Thank you very much.
All right, cheers. Best to you and your family.
Thanks, guys. See you fellas, take care. Enjoy the rest of your week.
See you in Miami.
Talk soon. All the best, guys. Will you be in
Miami?
No, Michael? I'm not. No, no. I was going to say sadly, but it's nice to have a break.
There you
honest.
Go.
Trust enjoy me, it.
I go to Kansas weekend. City, and then from there, I fly straight to Europe to do a small part in a film. So it's go, go, go. So I'll have a weekend off. I'll be sitting there. I'll have a Puncher's Chance in my hand. I'll have my feet up, the fire on, because it's bloody freezing in California. You fellas take care. See you soon.
Thanks, Michael. Take care.
Bye-bye.
I love Bisping. You were talking about, you know, his mindset when he was a fighter compared to, you know, what he's like now being an analyst in retirement. And there are just some personalities that seem to be a lot more, I don't want to say likable, because I always liked Mike. He was always very nice to me, but he's a lot more, you know, accommodating and doesn't have a chip on his shoulder like he did when he was fighting.
Oh, absolutely. No, Michael, let's see. He's a friend. He's a great guy. We flew back together, you know, hung out in the airport together. There's never a dull moment with Michael Bisping. That's all right. I can say.
Yeah.
So it's really enjoyable for sure.
Yeah.
TJ, what's up with you?
Let's see here. Last weekend, I was in Playa del Carmen down in Mexico for two shows. Eddie Bravo put on Medusa, which is female only jiu-jitsu. And then on Sunday, we did Combat Jiu-Jitsu Worlds, the welterweights. Phenomenal show. Mexico is just filled with, you know, amazing fight fans, and it's kind of interesting to see what Eddie has done and his partner Victor Davila have done in Mexico, because, you know, when COVID hit, they basically moved their entire operation to Cancun, and the jiu-jitsu scene there has just blown up in ways that I never really thought possible. We had Brandon Moreno in the house, so, you know, a national icon and hero was down there, and it was just one of the coolest nights I can ever really tell you about, Bruce, because it, you know, combat sports have grown so much as a whole because of the UFC, and now to see jiu-jitsu on this stage and doing well, a packed house in a country that is primarily known for its love of boxing, it was pretty special.
Very, very cool. No, that's great. I'm glad to see that the growth. I mean, nobody deserves it better than Victor Davila and Eddie Bravo. They work very hard to make that happen, and you too at the same time. I have the weekend off. I had a great time in San Antonio. I am going to thoroughly enjoy not having to, you know, travel this weekend. I will be in Miami next week. We'll talk more about that next week. Our sponsor for the show, aside from Puncher's Chance Bourbon and It's Time Cologne, basically, and also Rubet. which is a very big company that I work with, is our site, medicaleverything.com. And we're really happy to have them on the show. They send us health tips. The tip this week is 8 tips while traveling and what we do all the time, TJ.
Yeah.
You know, and just a couple tips here that apply really hard. You don't want to skip the jet lag. They say go to bed like 1 hour earlier for a few days before leaving. I agree with that. But at the same time, I time my stuff. They go into how to time your jet lag, the sanitizing of surfaces. And here's an interesting thing. When traveling abroad, it's important to avoid ice.
Oh, yeah. I just that kind of bit me a little bit in Mexico. I had ice from a restaurant and had a pretty upset stomach for about 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, because it can contain bacteria.
Yep.
Yeah. So they go into details about traveling tips and stuff. So check out medicaleverything.com, folks. Myself, we'll be back next week. I'll see you in Miami. Thank you for making us Time Cologne, the best selling cologne on Amazon. And you can also get it at Walmart. And with that being said, everybody set your goals, write them down, make sure you are totally knowledgeable about everything you do. So when you step off on that yellow brick road to success in your future, just be the best you can be, and then you're winning. And that's, again, as we always say, that's what we're all about on It's Time Radio. Be a role model to your sphere of influence, show respect to everybody, and let's all make this world a much better place, because we all have to do our part to do so. That's it. Buffer out. Have a great week.